From presidents to paupers, a common theme of the human race is self-deception. We lie, and what's more, we enjoy it. We're far from being the inherently good people our culture says we are. In fact, apart from certain restraints, we're capable of unspeakable evil. Today, another chapter in our journey of self-discovery, in which we find out why good people do bad things. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Our current series explains why good people do bad things. And today, Dr. Lutzer tells us why, apart from God's grace, we are deceived and loving it.
George Stephanopoulos, who for many years was an advisor to President Clinton, said these words during the days when the president's relationship with an intern made international headlines. The battle is all but over, and I'm still mystified by the Clinton paradox. How could a president so intelligent, so compassionate, so public-spirited, so conscious of his place in history, how could he act in such a stupid, selfish, and self-destructive manner? And that's the question for today's sermon. Why is it that intelligent people sometimes do things that are selfish, self-destructive, stupid, and sometimes even very evil? Why? Freud has a history of being known in psychoanalysis for his psychoanalysis, and he says that there is within us these urges, these drives, and they are tempered by society and cultural restraints, and we can be thankful for those restraints. Because if everyone followed his or her desires wherever they might lead, society would be nothing but chaos. Now, Freud was wrong in many respects because he did not believe in God, and therefore some of his conclusions are skewed. But he does have a point. And actually, it's much more serious than that, because it's not just for the restraints of society for which we can give thanks, but also that you and I have protective measures that we adopt to protect us from exposure, from being the people that we really are, and we hide our true selves from others. I've seen this happen many times. I've had women say to me that when I dated him, he was one man. After we were married, he was another. I had no idea that he had such a hot temper. I had no idea that he had lived a life of such deceit. All of that was hidden from me, and only now does it come out piece by piece. As a matter of fact, as a result of that, we have rationalizations, because the mind is used to somehow justify the desires of the heart. And so guilt is repressed. You have excuses that are made and believed, and we like to deceive ourselves and deceive others, and if possible, even deceive God. Spiritual maturity, as we learned in the last message, is to be able to be integrated. That is to say that what you see outside and the life that we live publicly is basically the people whom we really are privately. One day someone came to St. Francis of Assisi and said to him, "Art thou St. Francis?" And he said, "Yes." And the peasant said, "Take heed that thou be as good as men believe thee to be." Well, I wish I were as good as men believe me to be. We all desire that. I desire that. So that the image that we project is basically one of integrity. We say we love God and we love Him. We are not like the hypocrites about whom Jesus spoke. "This people, they honor me with their lips. They say one thing on Sunday, but quite a different thing on Monday. But their hearts," Jesus said, "are far from me." No, you and I want to live like we love Christ, because we indeed do love Him. Why do intelligent people do bad things? In order for us to get a handle on this, let's take our Bibles and turn to Genesis chapter 3, where it all got started. Genesis chapter 3. We need to paint the context in which sin entered into the world. Particularly, we shall talk about Eve, even though Adam is more culpable. But Genesis chapter 3 is an interesting context. The context is paradise. I want you to know that Eve was there with her husband, and at this time she did not yet have a sin nature. She did not have evil desires. She was, after a manner of speaking, perfect. Also, listen up, ladies. Think about this for a moment. She was married to a perfect husband. Oh, boy. Didn't have to tell him that he was lazy. Didn't have to have any insecurities. There was no competition with supermodels who grace our newsstands. None of that. Didn't have to worry about the woman next door who was spending too much time with her husband in off hours. Didn't have all those worries. No insecurities. She was perfect, her husband was perfect, and they lived in a perfect environment. Think about it. Was she hungry? She could eat all that she wanted. Did she desire beauty? There were the trees of the garden and the flowers of the garden and all the beauty that she could possibly imagine. Did she want a happy marriage? Imagine it. No arguments in the home, no worries about money. At this point, no discussion regarding problems with the children. That will come later. Here she is in a perfect environment. Oh, you say, but she needed unconditional love. Yes, she had it. She had it from her husband, and she had it from God. And in that context, her curiosity got the best of her. She still thought to herself, you know, if I do not go with what the serpent says, there is a certain intrigue that this tree has for me, and if I don't eat it, I will always wonder what it would have been like. And in that context, she still disobeyed God. Today we have behaviorism. Behaviorism says that people aren't evil. It is actually society that is. The reason that people steal is because they're hungry. They commit murder because society makes certain ground rules that instigates them to commit murder. Well, that's part of the story, most assuredly, but it's not the whole story. It's been indicated that in the shootings that take place in our high schools, that oftentimes these kids are from wealthy, good, in quotes, homes. So it isn't just society that is evil, it is we who are evil. But at this point, Eve did not have that evil nature yet. Furthermore, I'm reminded as I open this passage that she sinned against great light. She sinned in the face of incredible blessings from God. There was only one tree that they were not to eat of. Even the tree of life was apparently one that was not prohibited. If they had eaten it, they'd have been immortalized as good, innocent people, if I understand the text. God did not say, don't eat of it. He said, there is one tree in the midst of the garden, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Do not eat it, for in the day that you eat thereof, you shall die. Hundreds of trees that she could eat from. Just one negative, and that was the basis upon which she decided to disobey. You know, I've known people like Eve. Many of us are that way, sometimes sinning against great light. You have those who are brought up in good churches, good homes, praying parents, good Sunday schools, and they still do very evil, destructive things, and they turn from God. What's going on here in the text in chapter 3? Eve basically was intrigued by her desires, though at this point they were not yet sinful. And if you ask me, well, why did she choose against God in light of the fact that she didn't have these desires? We just have to say that that is mysterious. We do not know why. We do know that she did. It says in James chapter 1, and I love this expression in the NIV, it says that we sin when we are dragged away by our own desires and enticed. We are basically desire-driven. Facts do not matter much when it comes to behavior. Intelligence is not where it's at. Arguments will not cut it. They're helpful in a certain context, but they will not change behavior. Woody Allen was right. The heart wants what it wants, and the mind had better fall in line. What were the mistakes that Eve's desires dragged her away to do? I'm not going to read the entire first part of the third chapter because I'm going to assume that you are familiar with it. My text today is chapter 3, verse 6. When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her. All Hebrew scholars agree that Adam was there in the garden while this was happening. And he ate it. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked, so they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. The next message in this series has to do with shame. But notice the mistake she made. First of all, she preferred her perceptions to God's word. You see, God had said, do not eat of it. That was the warning. Satan made a promise. In the day that you eat of it, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And here she was needing to make a decision between the two. And the tree looked good. In fact, the tree was good. Everything that God created was good. Can't imagine that it was a bad tree. The problem is that God decided that this tree would be a basis of a test. God could have said something else. He could have said, the moment you cross this stream, you are going to die. But he chose a tree, and God said, this is the way in which I'm going to give you an opportunity to choose either for me or against me. So God built into something, like the tree, that was good, inherent consequences that could not be seen by the human eye. And so Eve stood there and she looked at it. And she decided to redefine God's prohibition. This is Pastor Lutzer. I believe that one of the most remarkable characteristics of sin is that it has within it those inherent characteristics that I referred to that no one can possibly predict. Standing there in the Garden of Eden, most assuredly, Adam and Eve had no idea about the series of dominoes that they were going to set in motion and the long-range consequences of their sin. You and I are the same way. Our minds and hearts cannot see into the future, and what we do today that is sinful, whatever rationalizations we may give to it, the fact is that long-term, of necessity, consequences must always be negative. So I end today urging your heart and mind to be obedient to whatever God should ask us to do.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer with part one of Deceived and Loving It. Tomorrow, more on that first human deception. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. You're hearing Why Good People Do Bad Things. This series is now a book, which we'd like to send as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Make it a point to join us for our next edition of Running to Win.